Originating from Las Vegas, Nevada, you're listening to LV Rocks. Noise from Vegas.
Attention, see that the humans remain entertained. That the humans remain entertained until the end. Presenting His Eminence, our Imperious Leader.
That's right. I am the imperious leader of LV Rocks. Well, I don't know about LV Rocks. I think he's coming back next week, but I'm the Lucifer to his imperious leader. What do you think? I don't know. Anyway, my name is Sean O'Mac, Sean Daly. Again, call me if you want. Just don't call me late for dinner. And welcome to Subject to Discussion. Like I was saying in the chat room, I won't be here next week, so there is no show. So don't come here looking for a show because you're not going to find one. You'll have Khan here playing the flute or something, won't you? Anyway, my email is seanomacradio@yahoo.com. The website is subject2discussion.com.
I'll be playing the flesh flute.
You can play the best of the Galactica shows or something. You may not even be here next week, so we don't know who's going to be running this thing. Anyway, and the show is on every Wednesday night, except for next week, at 6 p.m. on lvrocks.com, 6 p.m. Pacific. Now I got to go through all this. 6 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. if you're in the Midwest, 9 p.m. if you're on the East Coast, because somebody emailed me, oh, is it 6 o'clock? Is it 6 o'clock all over the country? I'm like, no. I mean, people should know what time zone they live in. How the hell can you not know what time zone you're in?
Yeah, you do 3 hours of the same show.
Oh, so no, I don't know if I could sit through this for 3 hours. No. Anyway, it's 6 p.m. here in the West Coast, 8 p.m. if you're in Chicago, 9 p.m. if you're in New York. So there you go. And figure it out, in your time zone. Usually if you open your phone book, it has the time zones listed. You can figure out where you're at in the time zones.
Or if you go on the Internet, you can go to worldtimezone.com.
There you go. And my first guest is going to be in a few minutes. It'll be Eric Jaffa from the moveleft.com site. And then later, Koenig Rules will be on for our final season finale of Galactica updates for the season, because I won't be here next week, so I'm considering this is my season finale. And he's got a blockbuster nugget of news that's going to rock Battlestar Galactica about the second season. And then on May 25th, when I come back, God willing, Eric Olson from one of the biggest blogs in the world will be here. Blogcritics.org will be on, and so it'll be interesting to talk to him. And I've been going back and forth with him. And I also might be hooking up with Pajamas Media, so I'm thinking about that. But anyway, I was going to start reading my questions, but the guest isn't here yet. So I wrote everything down, because usually you have to, Con here has to remind me what to say. So I wrote it all down, and I'm trying to read down my questions. Who the hell am I going to be answering them? Anyway, if you're in the listening to the show off LVRocks.com, click on...
I should just change my name to LV Rocks Director.
You might as well. Click on, if you're listening to the show, click on Cam and Chat to join us in the chat room. I see a lot of the old friends in there, Sci-Fi, Lil Buck, Publius, Claudius, whoever his name is, he's in there. And I'm going to start off with the news a little bit. Today was that fiasco in Washington with the evacuation of the White House and the Capitol building. Some jackass flew the plane into the no-flight zone over the Capitol. Two idiots, actually. A small plane strayed within 3 miles of the White House on Wednesday, leading to a frantic evacuation. They actually made the United States look bad. They show people fleeing, running evacuation from the Capitol and the White House. It made us look like we're weak. I mean, can't they find out it was a small little one-engine plane? Why the hell do they have to evacuate all those buildings? It didn't make any sense. Evacuation of the executive mansion in the Capitol with military jets scrambling to intercept the aircraft and firing flares to steer it away. A pilot and a student pilot en route from Pennsylvania to an air show in North Carolina were taken to custody after their flight sparked a frenzy of activity that tested the Capitol's post-September 11th response system. They decided not to press charges, which is ridiculous. That's going to make more of these people do this stuff just to get publicity or, just to test it. Actually, they should charge these jackasses for flying into the no-flight zone. After interviewing the men and determining that the incident was an accident, So, and they were navigating by sight. Now, pilots I know, I have a cousin that's a pilot, you navigate by sight and the damned sonar, radar, whatever the hell it is. What kind of pilot is he? I hope he doesn't fly for United Airlines. That's what I'm going out on. The White House raised the threat level to red, the highest for 8 minutes. Spokesman Scott McClellan, Vice President Cheney, First Lady Laura Bush, and former First Lady Nancy Reagan, who was overnighting at the White House for a special event, were forced and were moved to secure locations. President Bush was riding his Huffy with a high school friend and somewhere in Maryland, was unaware of the midday 15-minute scare that was occurring. I cannot know. I mean, you think they would have told him, hey, you got, you know, all hell's breaking loose in the Capitol, but, you know, my bottom, he's riding his Huffy. I remember one time he fell off of it. And then we had, this is from Monday, we had 88 members of the Congress calling Bush for answers on secret Iraq plan. 88 members of Congress have signed a letter, letter authored by Representative John Conyers, Democrat of Michigan, calling on President Bush to answer questions about a secret U.S.-UK agreement to attack Iraq, which we mentioned last week. Unfortunately, the mainstream media in the United States was too busy with the wall-to-wall coverage of a runaway bride to cover a bombshell report out of the British newspapers. The London Times reports that the British government, the United States government, had secretly agreed to attack Iraq in 2002 before authorization was sought for such an attack in Congress. And it discussed creating pretextual justifications for doing so. And in the Times, London Times report, based on newly discovered document in 2002, Tony Blair chaired a meeting which he expressed his support for regime change. He also discussed the need for America to create conditions to justify the war. So Conyers has got these letters and questions among the documents that the things that the document revealed that Blair chaired a 2002 meeting in July when he discussed military options, committed himself to supporting President Bush's plans for invading Iraq. A separate secret briefing for the meeting said that Britain and America had to create conditions to justify a war. And a British official reported on his recent talks in Washington, there was a perceptual shift in attitude. Military action was now seen as inevitable. Bush wanted to remove Saddam through military actions, justified by the conjunction of terrorism and WMD. But the he was looking under the chairs a couple years ago. I don't think he found him at the White House. But the intelligence and facts were fixed around the policy. So as a result, Conyers and these 88 members of Congress wanted to answer these questions that Bush answered. Do you or anyone in your administration dispute the accuracy of the leaked document? Number two, were arrangements being made, including the recruitment of allies, before you sought congressional authorization to go to war? Did you or anyone in your administration obtain Britain's commitment to invade prior to this time? Was there an effort to create an ultimatum about weapons inspectors in order to help with the justification for the war, as the minutes indicate? At what point did you and Prime Minister Blair first agree it was necessary to invade Iraq? Was there a coordinated effort with the U.S. intelligence agents, community and or British officials to fix the intelligence and facts around the policy as a leaked document states? Wow. So, I mean, I hope he answers it, but, I mean, with all this, you know, the single plane flying around it, the whole damn, all these channels were talking about this little plane flying into the no-fly zone, and, you know, nothing else got talked about today at all. And we said that Bush is seeking to regain GOP support. This is from today. He can't just blame the Democrats. Some lawmakers and President Bush's own party are giving him an increasingly hard time over everything from Social Security to a free trade pact for Central America to his plan to ease immigration laws. It may be an early lame duck warning for his presidency. Meanwhile, partisan acrimony has gotten so strong that Senate Democratic Leader Harry Reid of Nevada recently called Bush a loser. Maybe it was a poor choice of words. What is it with him? Of course it's a poor choice of words. I mean, you may think that, but for crying out loud, and he's in front of a bunch of kids, and he uttered that. Maybe it's a poor choice of words, but I want everyone within the sound of my voice to know how displeased I am with what this White House is doing to our country. I mean, you don't call the man a loser. I mean, you got to defeat him in the arena of ideas and actions, not the name-calling. Here it is, and more about Reid calling Bush a loser. Senate Democratic Leader Harry Reid, Pinky as they call him, here's his nickname, called Bush a loser during a civics discussion with a group of teenagers at high school on Friday here in Las Vegas. The man's father, referring to George Herbert Walker Bush, is a wonderful human being, but I think this guy is a loser. Shortly after the event, Reid called the White House to apologize. His spokeswoman, Tessa Heffen, said Reid spoke with Bush advisor Karl Rove, told him to shove it, asking him to convey the apology to Bush, who was traveling Europe. I mean, I really don't think Reid should be the minority leader anyway. It should be senator from Connecticut. Excuse me, he was a majority leader before. Anybody but Reed, I say, because it looks like the man sucks on pickles all day. Tuesday, the showdown on judicial nominees may come next week. And this is from Thomas Ferraro, U.S. Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist, who looks like Mr. Rogers, said on Tuesday he may force a long-awaited showdown as early as next week on whether to ban any more Democratic procedural roadblocks against President Bush's judicial nominees. Frist says, I think it's time, he said, that the Senate would complete work likely this week on the legislation before it and then turn to a group of controversial judicial nominees that could trigger a historic fight. To me, it's common sense, and it has to do with principle, and that each of these nominees deserve an up-and-down vote. Senate Democrats blocked 10 of Bush's circuit court nominees with procedural hurdles known as filibusters. Bush, blah, 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 we know about that filibuster. So it looks like all hell's going to break loose in a couple days. And Reid offers an olive branch on Bush nominee. Harry Reid, again, on Monday, this is after he called him a loser, and you know, so he's trying to shore up him getting nailed for calling him a loser. Offered Democrat support for one of President Bush's judicial nominees, former Senate lawyer Thomas Griffith, as a goodwill gesture in a confrontation for banning judicial filibusters. So, I mean, this is going on and on and on. Senate defies White House on highway bill. The Senate moved on Monday to add about $11 billion to a six-year highway and transit bill, putting it on a collision course with President Bush and a threatened veto. They revised the package with extra money, which would raise spending for the long-delayed legislation for about $295 billion, which would be paid for by finding new revenue for the Federal Highway Trust Fund. And that money comes out of the federal gas tax. So right now it's 18.4%, so I would imagine they're going to jack that up a little bit. A vote on the bill, including the $11 billion addition, could come by the end of this week. Transportation Secretary Norman Mineta, in a statement put out in anticipation of the Senate move, said it would bankrupt the trust fund, the money coming in from the federal gas tax, by using accounting gimmicks. So, I don't know. And the Texas Transportation Institute's 2005 Urban Mobility Report issued Monday found that in 2003 there were $3.7 billion of travel delay and 2.3 billion gallons of wasted fuel for a total cost of more than $63 billion to the nation. So the roads do need to be fixed, especially when you're in Vegas. These roads are a mess. We're going on that. Gas tax, the gas tax is 18.4%, so they're going to wipe out the trust fund. So I would imagine they're going to raise the federal gas tax. Let's see, what else here? Congress approves additional $82 billion for the wars. Congress approved an additional $82 billion for Iraq and Afghanistan and combating terrorism worldwide on Tuesday, boosting the cost of global efforts since 2001 to more than $300 billion. Senate approved the measure by 100-0. No, wait a minute. How can the Democrats justify going along with this? You know what I mean? They're barking that he spent all this money in Iraq. Not one of them voted against this. They approved him 100-0. The House easily approved the measure last week, and now goes to President Bush for his signature, which is certain. Where was Boxer? Where was Hillary Clinton? Where are all these people? This is the fifth such emergency spending package Congress has taken up since September 11th. The bill includes sweeping immigration changes and a nearly tenfold increase in the one-time payment for families of troops killed in combat. And then a sprawling embassy. We're going to build the Vegas casino in Baghdad for Condoleezza Rice Aroney and all that. I mean, why do you need this $592 million embassy? I mean, they got a couple of palaces in there. Convert those into the embassy. I mean, how much money can that cost? The president sent Congress his spending proposal in February and a final bill. Blah, blah, blah. So we're going to hash out the differences between the two bills. And this is from... from the Pentagon, I got this from Monday. 1,700 sex assaults reported, according to the Pentagon. Military criminal investigators received 1,700 reports of sexual assault in 2004. Let's see, some of these cases, I'm going to skip through this. 880, slightly more than half, involve a alleged assault by at least one military person against another. 425 involved an alleged assault by at least one member of the military against a non-service member. 99 involved an alleged assault by at least one non-service member. It's a member of the military, so I mean it's a civilian attacking a member of the military. 296 involved an unidentified assailant against a member of the military. And blah, 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 sort of stuff. This is from Saturday, actually. We had more blasts in Iraq today. Saturday, Iraq blast kills 22, including two Americans. Two suicide car bombs exploded in a central Baghdad square Saturday, killing 22 people, including two American contract workers, as Iraqi political leaders agreed on nominees for 6 of the 7 vacant cabinet posts that they have. The attacks are part of a surge in violence that has killed nearly 300 people, many of them Iraqi soldiers and police. At least 36 Iraqis and 3 Americans were wounded in the attack in the Tahrir Square, where shops were damaged and sport utility vehicles were burned by the blasts. Remains of mutilated bodies were seen lying in the street as fire trucks fought the blaze. It's worse. And then this is from Monday. U.S. attack in Iraq kills 100 insurgents. Hundreds of American troops backed by helicopter gunships and warplanes swept into remote desert villages near the Syrian border on Monday, hunting for followers of Iraq's most wanted terrorists, killing as many 100 militants since the weekend operation began. The U.S. military said some foreign fighters were believed among the insurgents killed in the first 48 hours of the assault. At least 3 Marines were killed in the region. Let's go on and on and on. And then this is from Tuesday. Fighting continues in western Iraq. Fighting continued in western Iraq along the Syrian border, where a force of 1,000 Marines launched an offensive 3 days ago to flush out insurgents who have dug into communities along the Euphrates River. Reports of these people are in uniforms. In some cases, they're wearing protected vests, and there's some suspicion that their training exceeds what they have seen with other engagements further east. So, that keeps on. And this is from Monday. And Nancy Pelosi, the Democratic House leader, she said in a letter to the editor at the San Francisco Chronicle that President Bush must stabilize Iraq with strategy for success. She said 2 years ago this month, President Bush stood on an aircraft carrier under a banner that says mission accomplished. She said it should have read credibility demolished. The Presidential Commission Investigative Intelligence on Weapons of Mass Destruction recently concluded the harm done to American credibility by our all-too-public intelligence failings in Iraq will take years to undo. She says it should be a plan to get our troops out of Iraq. Says her plan would include enhanced training for Iraqi security forces so they focus on the quality of personnel trained, not just the quality. Blah, blah, blah. So I don't think I'm going to get that through because it's you know, the train's down the track, so I don't know, unless it keeps going on until Bush gets out of there, we get somebody there who can get these troops home. And Halliburton's getting a bonus for their Iraq work. U.S. Army said on Tuesday they had awarded $72 million in bonuses to Halliburton and I think stock options and for logistics work in Iraq, but had not decided whether to give the Texas company bonuses for disputed dining services to the troops. She says, this is from the Army, stated in a letter, that we have to protect the taxpayers first, said the Army in a statement released later, pointing out this program in this paragraph had been inadvertently left off the original news release. Oh, yeah, they have to save the taxpayers, you know, $10 million, but we can spend $300 billion over there, so it doesn't make any sense. We're our guests, probably have to call our guests. Do you want to play a song so we can get our guests on, or you want to call them? It's up to you. You want to call them? So we get Eric Jaffa on the phone here from Move Left, and then let's keep going through the well-domed, Sean. What is this? Iran confirms uranium to gas conversion. I'm sick of all that nonsense in the Mideast. United States denounces desecration reports. The State Department described Tuesday as reprehensible reports that U.S. troops at the American prison in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, have desecrated copies of the Quran. The reports have touched off protests in Afghanistan and expressions of dismay by government officials in Pakistan. Blah, blah, blah. Newsweek magazine reported recently that in order to rattle suspects, U.S. interrogators placed Qurans on toilets and in one case flushed a holy book down the toilet. So that's lovely, lovely, lovely. Critics asked Congress to temper the Patriot Act. That's up for renewal. They wanted Congress to pass the SAFE Act to limit the Patriot Act in several ways, including requiring government officials to inform suspects about the sneak and peek searches within 7 days if a judge does not intervene. Because they have this rule in the Patriot Act that they can go in your house or into your computer without even knowing it. Sneak in, look at your stuff, and leave without even knowing that they're there or you know that they're there. Airports reluctant to hire private screeners on... Was he on the line? Eric Jaffa? Are you on?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're late with him. Eric Jaffa, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
There you go.
Your program tonight.
I'm sorry?
Yes, I said pleasure to be on your program tonight.
Thank you very much for coming on. And once again, this is Eric... Am I getting your last name right? Jaffa? Is that
right?
That's right. All right. He's from Move Left, and he's going to one of the more prolific. Yeah, well, yours not really a blog, though. Yours is more of a site than a blog, right?
Well, no, I call it a blog.
You
sure.
do? Oh, okay. And because you're, you know, some of the blogs are just, you know, the columns and that's it. But yours, you know, you got a little bit of everything going on here. I mean, to me, it feels like more like a website than a blog. Well, they're basically the same thing. You know what I mean? Right?
Well, what I've done recently is that right now I just display the most recent
yeah.
article on the front page. Mm-hmm. That might make the front page a little bit less bloggity
yeah.
than before, but I'm following the format of a blog called The Daily Howler, which also mm-hmm. just shows the most recent article on the front page. And then if you click Show All, or if you click any of those little pictures, you get more articles all displayed, one on top of another, so then you get the more traditional blog feel out of that.
And now, what's news on your blog right now? I'm on it. You got about Air America coming back to Chicago, right?
Yeah, I was very pleased with that because right after they started, just 2 weeks after Air America started, they went off the air in both Chicago and Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And everybody was saying that they're doomed, and, you know, we didn't know which way it was going to go. So to have them back on in Chicago, even if it's just with a small watt transmitter, mm-hmm. you know, it's something to, you know, hopefully they'll be able to upgrade it soon, and then in Chicago will be able to hear them.
Yeah, they got into a dispute with the station owner. He owned, I think, like five stations in that block. I think it was Urban Broadcasting or something like that, Mr. Liu. And then he had to do something with a check that bounced, and he pulled him off some of the stations, I think two of his stations, and then they never could get back on Chicago. And now I think, I don't know what the station is they're on. I'm from there, so like you said, it's a weak station. I think they used to have the Chicago Sting Soccer on that station. So
they keep adding stations,
yeah.
and they're on in almost 60 now. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, Rush Limbaugh is on in 600, but... You know, the actual difference in the number of people who can tune in isn't actually 10 to 1. Al Franken was saying that
mm-hmm.
Air America can reach 60% of the country now, and Rush Limbaugh can reach, you know, like 99% of the country.
Huh. And now, for someone who may not know, what is your blog about? If you had to sum up your blog, what is it about?
Okay, well, something which I'm trying to do, which I haven't seen on other blogs, is that I have a theme by day of the week. So on each Monday, my theme is conservative con, and I write about how a conservative is trying to trick the public with an awful social security scheme or something of that sort.
Yeah.
And then on Tuesdays, I talk about voting rights. I think that the ideal system would be the Canadian way of paper ballots, hand-counted, and I advocate for optical scan ballots as a second best to that, and
I'm strongly
opposed to paperless electronic voting machines. So
you mean like the ovals like we had in school, we fill out the Scantron?
Yeah, that's what we use throughout Minnesota, and I think that's a decent system. There should be more checks on it than we currently have. They should at least count a sample of those by hand. But I think that that's a much better system than using a cumbersome electronic system which might be rigged and which can't really be audited.
Yeah. Well, I think the whole country should be on the same voting machine anyway. I mean, it's ridiculous to get some parts, you know, the punch cards, and some others got the, you know, electric, you know, in Chicago, we still have those huge machines that look like washers, and you walk into and pull the lever. I mean, this is, you know, 2005. We should all, you know, at least somehow move it into the, you know, somehow like a standard system across the country. You know what I mean? You agree?
I'm having trouble hearing you. Can you make, your voice come through louder to my phone.
All right. Now, I said, now, do you agree with me? I think that the voting system machines all across the country should be the same. You know what I'm saying? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm having trouble hearing you.
Oh, let me turn him up for... I said the voting machines, I think, should be the same across the country. We all should be on the same.
I mean, especially if they were paper ballots hand-counted throughout the country. If they had paperless electronic voting machines throughout the country, I think that would be even worse than what we have right now.
Really? Really? I don't know. I just there's got to be some system where maybe we give electronic with a paper trail. You know what I mean?
Okay, but yeah, the problem with that is most voters don't check. Mm-hmm. So, and also when there's a problem and people complain to the people working in that precinct, they're just like, oh, everything's okay, don't worry about it. So, you know, I mean, with an optical scan ballot, people fill it out themselves, deposit it themselves in the box. But with an electronic voting machine, if a person pushes candidate Smith and then the paper says candidate Jones, mm-hmm. and they, you know, call over the person in the precinct and say, hey, this is wrong, they'll just say, oh, do it over. And, you know, the machine can be programmed to get it right every other time.
Yeah.
But if it's rigged in favor of candidate Jones, then, you know, the election is, you know, it's going to be unfair.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, there was a problem in the 2004 election in New Mexico, the presidential election, that people were pressing John Kerry, and then on the display screen, afterwards, it would say George W. Bush, and they would complain about this, but then, you know, the people working there would just say, oh, everything's okay, just make the change.
Well,
and,
I mean,
you know, the election went ahead with that obvious problem,
yeah.
I mean, which could have been hidden if it was intentional. I think it was unintentional, because
yeah.
they didn't have to show the person.
Yeah. Well,
what
I mean,
going on there.
The thing with the machines, I mean, you got these volunteers. I've done that for a couple of years, you know, working at the polling station, and you only get like 2 days of training, and it's just like, come on. I mean, you know, we got to take these elections serious. You know, can we have, you know, hire a staff, a professional, even bring in some temps and show them how these machines work. So when you walk into the machine, you'll know how to work it. Now you have the, you know, 80-year-old grandma there. Oh, I think you just press this button. I mean, you know, we treat these elections like they're like it's elementary. I mean, this is the fate of our country. I think we should, you know, look at these elections as a serious business. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that because elections are held relatively infrequently, I think the simpler the better.
Mm-hmm.
It's necessary to automate a process if you're doing it every day.
Yeah.
But if you just have federal elections once in 2 years, we can have hand-counted paper ballots.
Mm-hmm.
Hire one group of people to sit there during the day and another bipartisan group to count the votes during the night.
That makes sense. Now, I'm going through the news a little bit. There's a new poll that came out that about the women returning to the Democratic Party. Did you pick up on that?
I just saw that headline.
I
didn't read the details of that one.
Yeah,
it says, that's certainly good news.
Yeah, well, it says that the Bush, you know, we know, but Bush closed the gap last year. You know, the survey in March found that women favoring Democrats, when asked, you know, about which party would they support if the congressional elections were held today. I mean, that's only got to help. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I wonder if, you know, Bush's Social Security scheme has something to do with that.
Yeah, I don't know.
A lot of both women and men find the idea highly distasteful that they've been paying into Social Security for all these years, being promised one amount for their retirement, and now Bush wants to automatically slash everyone's benefits from what they've been promised.
Yeah, I mean, the plan, I don't know, I mean, you know, I agree something's got to be done, and his plan is a good starting point, but, you know, that reverse indexing, I mean, it's good for, you know, the lower class and everything, that give them more benefits, but then, you know, I keep saying, why don't they raise the cap, because you make up the 90,000, and it's only, you pay Social Security only your first 90,000. Once you go over 90, you don't have to pay Social Security. Everybody who's getting a check should be paying into Social Security. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, but, yeah, I would say that the Bush's plan is even worse than what you just described, because under his plan, people who make less than
$20,000
get the same amount as they were promised in the first place, and it's everybody who makes over $20,000 who has to see drastic cuts to no benefits.
Yeah.
One way of explaining it is that right now when people retire, they typically get 36% of their salary through Social Security after they've retired.
Mm.
But under Bush's plan, they'd only be getting 20%.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Social Security is a problem, but I mean, like I said, like, even with FDR, when he started, he said that Social Security is not supposed to be our sole source of retirement. You know, it's the American people who aren't saving, and that's a big problem. I mean, I saw a report today that I don't know how many, the percentage is sky high that people are, you know, going bankrupt and our saving rate is low. You know, the government wants us to save, then all of a sudden they give us this spending, you know, these tax cuts that encourage us to spend money. So they got, I mean, what are we supposed to do? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. It's not enough for people to just rely on Social Security. That's just sort of the bare minimum. And that's, you know, we want to guarantee people that bare minimum, though. I don't want to see any changes to Social Security at this time. I think that if the Democrats, the Democrats sort of say, oh, we want to pass a plan which raises the cap, then the Republicans who control the majority would pass a plan which might do that, but would do a bunch of other things to undermine Social Security.
Yeah.
So I think that, as columnist E.J. Dionne wrote, that Democrats just need to step away from the table and just not make any deals at this time. There is no crisis. We should wait until Democrats have a majority in either the House or the Senate before addressing the possible fiscal shortfall of the Social Security program.
Now, were you watching the hell freezing over on the Capitol steps today with Hillary Clinton and Newt Gingrich standing side by side? Did you watch that?
I
thought I was dreaming.
Apparently they got together to endorse putting more of our medical records on electronic storage. And, you know, I think that when medical records are written on paper, you know, that their privacy is more secure. When they go into a central database, you know, all sorts of people will have easy access to them. So I'm not thrilled with that proposal.
Yeah. But, I mean, I thought Hillary Clinton was saying, she joked that their joint effort has raised eyebrows. She said that at our first meeting, when we were agreeing so much with each other, I thought people thought the end is near. You know, she says that, where she said, I find he and I have a lot in common in the way we see the problems that we're going to have to deal with in order to have a 21st century healthcare system. And Newt Gingrich says, we're at a stage in our lives, we're getting some good things done for the country. Strikes us as a pretty important way to spend our time. He talked to newspaper editors last month. He expects Hillary to win re-election next year and then capture her party's nomination in 2008 and has a good chance to win. So, I mean, it's amazing.
Newt Gingrich said that Hillary Clinton has a good chance
to win. Yeah, and he said any Republican who thinks she'll be easy to beat has total amnesia about the Clintons. Newt Gingrich said that he also said that she has the added benefit of her husband, the smartest American politician alive, as her advisor. So I mean, that's amazing. He realizes.
Okay, well, yeah, that was nice of him. I give him credit for saying that.
Well, and then I think yesterday, where he was in Iowa, so there are rumblings that he's going to run for president. He's not running for president. He's running to sell his book. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because he's got a lot of skeletons rattling.
He has good enough instincts to know that he shouldn't run for president. But, yeah, people want to sell books. It's always nice to have that rumor running around.
Yeah.
You know, Donald Trump.
Oh, no.
You know, frequently, you know, hints that he might run for president when
he stands about as much chance of being president as I do. You know what I mean? No way.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, you know. But I mean, and then we had a poll that lists Hillary Clinton and Rudy Giuliani as their top party picks in 2008. So, but Giuliani, you know, I don't think Giuliani is another one doesn't stand a chance. You know, he's got that baggage from his marriage, you know, all that, you know, dirt. And then he got the Carrick business they'll throw back at him. And in the look, he's got, like I said, he's got that bad accountant from New York look with the comb over. You know what I mean?
Well, I think that's the main reason.
Yeah.
Yeah. Get the nominee. I don't think it's really his looks, but just that he's pro-choice and pro-gay rights, and I don't think that's going to play well with Republican primary voters.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if you saw the news from Newsweek that Nixon's son-in-law is going to run against Hillary for a Senate seat in 2006.
Whose son-in-law?
Richard Nixon, Edward Cox.
Oh, I wasn't familiar with that.
Yeah, his daughter Trisha Nixon. She married Edward Cox. So anyway, he's going to run for Senate against Hillary.
Okay, well, Hillary Clinton is.
She's
in New York. I'm really, not concerned that she won't win in 2006. I'm very confident that she will.
Wait, we think of that probe at the Hillary Clinton fundraiser that they're trying to churn this up into a huge scandal.
I really don't think that's going to go anywhere.
Yeah.
I doubt there's anything to that.
Well, there was questions about the fundraiser service after Peter F. Paul, a three-time convicted felon, he pleaded guilty in March for security fraud charges. He told the FBI he gave hundreds of thousands of dollars that Clinton's campaign didn't report. And he told prosecutors he spent $1.1 million, but reported the amount was $400,000. So, I mean, I think they're starting to come after them, after her again. They know, she's like the big gorilla in 08 sitting there. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, on your blog, every day you have a different topic going on. How'd you come up with that idea? I mean, that's original. Usually you get the bloggers, it's every day, it's everything.
Yeah, I took it from the New York Times. Really, they have a special section by day of the week, like Science Tuesday or the Friday weekend section. And so I'm basically bringing a slightly similar concept to my blog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty ingenious, though. Every day you got something, get a reason, like a schedule where people go to your blog and see, a certain day. You got the one about the voter rights day, and Wednesday's your fun day, right?
On Fridays, I like to have a music video or a cartoon, animation, something humorous which someone wrote.
Well, and also you have that 4-minute commercial or video you created yourself, produced. It's excellent, by the way.
Oh, yeah, glad you like it.
Yeah.
I didn't have any previous experience with video editing. I really put a lot of time into that, and it was very satisfying to get to express my view of liberal values in that video called Liberal Values, American Values.
Yeah. It's pretty good. And I have another question here from the chat room. Have you seen the Huffington Press, and what do you think about it?
I've visited, I like it. There's a huge quantity of material there which can be viewed as good or bad. You can either view it as like, wow, every time I go there I see all these posts I didn't see before. Or else you can think of that in terms of, oh, what's all this stuff? I lost my place. I can't keep up with all this. They're throwing too much stuff at me.
Yeah. She's, for those of you who don't know, Arianna Huffington started a I don't know what it is. It's a site, but it's like a catalog of blogs. I mean, it's hard to figure out. It's like a drudge.
It's like a combination of blog and news portal.
Yeah, and she has a lot of celebrities on there writing. She's got Walter Cronkite, and I don't know who else is on there, but he's the big one I noticed. And I mean, it's nice. I mean, she's it's a lot of effort. It's a lot of money to put a site like that up, huh?
They do have a lot of big names there. A lot going on there. Just one thing which I didn't like about it was that at least the last time I visited, they don't allow comments on the things which people like Walter Cronkite write. They allow comments on the Wire stories. Mm-hmm. When they reprint an AP story, they let a visitor comment on the AP story, but they won't let us comment on what Rob Reiner writes and what Walter Cronkite writes, etc. And that doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, well, it's because they don't want you hurting their feelings by disagreeing with them.
Yeah, that's the best which I could come up with as an explanation. If she wants to protect her celebrity friends from criticism.
Which is nuts. You know what I mean? Because like I said, I've, you know, I'm, I, I go to the left on most things, but I go to the right on some other things. I'm all for a strong military, and you know, and abortion. I think it should be, you know, rare, you know, and all that stuff. So I mean, I kind of like, you know, bob around a little bit, but I mean, come on, you can disagree. I mean, these people are grown ups; they can handle, you know, being challenged. I think, you know.
Yeah, I mean, those who are activists have probably gotten back in their day.
I know, especially Rob Reiner. I mean, he was out there, you know, pounding the drums in California all during the election. He's a big boy. He can take care of himself, you know?
Yeah.
Meathead, right?
Absolutely. I think if it were up to Rob Reiner, he would let people post comments. Maybe they should just change the structure and allow each person who writes to allow comments.
That's what I think.
Maybe that would be a better way of structuring it. Yeah. So that's my biggest criticism, that it would just be so much more satisfying if you could read something a celebrity wrote and then post your own comments and see it right below what that celebrity wrote.
Yeah.
So in a sense, it might decrease the popularity of the website that she isn't allowing people to give their feedback there.
Yeah. And then now, looking ahead, like you say, looking ahead to the 06 and 08 elections, what role are you hoping to play with your blog?
Okay, well, it depends partially on what new rules the FEC comes out with. But if there aren't any significant changes, then I intend to, ask people to donate to specific candidates, to volunteer for them, to, you know, provide more information about close races, which, you know, they may or may not have already heard about. You know, that's basically what I did during the 2004. Unfortunately, most of the people, I supported lost. I mean, with Ken Salazar, it was like the one exception, the senator from Colorado. I supported him, and he won. But, yeah, just about everybody else, I supported lost in 2004.
Now, what do you think? Are blogs here to stay, or are they a fad?
No, I think they're here to stay.
Really? Really? Very good. I mean, do you see, like they say, you know, talk radio is basically, you know, the bastion of the conservatives. Well, it's starting changing now, and the blogs are the bastion of the left. Now, you think if in 08, say, if we do elect Hillary president, are the blogs, you think you can see a lot of blogs just go away, or you can see the right kind of trying to take over?
No, because I think that she'd be a centrist president, and I think that people on the left would want to express their criticism that she was being too centrist.
Well, and she's always
also
been.
I think that they'd be thrilled to have the novelty of writing about a Democratic president.
Especially a woman.
Probably for the first time since they started blogging.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, this is Eric Jaffa. Eric, we're going to let you go.
Okay.
All right. We thank you for being on.
You're welcome.
Thank you. And once again, it was Eric Jaffa from MoveLeft.com, the blog. And in just a minute or so, we'll be joined by Koenig Rules for his Galactica update, which promises to rock the Galactica universe. But like I said, I've been pounding the drums for Hillary Clinton for a while now. I said that it says Washington Post. I want to finish with this before he comes on. Peter Beinart wrote that no shift to the center. Hillary Clinton has moved to the center in preparation for 2008. It's become a cliche. So evidently true that it shows up not merely in editorials, but in news articles as well. New York Conservative Party leader Michael Long told the New York Times, all of a sudden she is saying she has these deep convictions. I don't believe that. It's clear to me she was getting ready to launch her candidacy for president. And the headlines read, as Clinton shifts themes, debate arises on her motives. And now she's been a centrist all her life. Now, I remember in Illinois she was around, and she sat there for the Nixon impeachment hearings and all that stuff. In May 1993, in a long profile by the same New York Times, Hillary Clinton spoke at length about her Christian youth group, about theologians such as Paul Tillich and Dietrich Bonhoeffer, and about her guest sermons for the United Methodist Church. She is moved, wrote Michael Kelly, by the impatient conviction that moderates and liberals have wanly surrendered the objective religious to the right. That was 12 years ago. In the same article, Clinton attacks rights without responsibilities, endorses welfare reform, and lavishes praise on an article by Daniel Patrick Moynihan called Defining Deviancy Down, which argued that Americans were tolerating more and more antisocial behavior. Absolutely. Amen. In fact, Clinton used the same formulation on abortion Safe, Legal, and Rare that her husband did. National Security, she's been quite hawkish since airing the Senate. I mean, she's gone along with everything with the Iraq war. I don't agree with the spending bill that they all approved, but where else? And she said, but there is something deeper. The unstated assumption that high-profile women, especially feminists, must in their hearts be dovish, relativistic, and secular. Republicans will exploit that stereotype in their effort to keep Hillary from the Oval Office. But before playing along, the press should first figure out whether it's actually true. So there you go, right there. And see, I'm gonna mention this. Well, we'll bring Coney on. So, and we'll be joined.
Attention.
There you go. And by Koenig Rules. Koenig. Hello.
Hello.
Ah, Koenig. Thank you.
Yeah.
Once again, this is Koenig Rules. He's from GalacticaStation.com, MediaBoulevard.com, and what is it? BSG Flight. What is that one? North.
Well, I post occasionally on BattlestarGalacticaFleets.com.
Well, we welcome you to my season finale here. The show won't be on next week. Once again, no show next week. I'll be back on the 25th with hello, I lost all my sound. Well, no show next week. I'll be back on the 25th with Eric Olson from the Blog Critics. And Koenig, you got some news for us, I guess.
Yes.
Save the big one for last.
The news items and end with the big one.
Yes.
Okay, first about Tarn, who dies in episode 2.
Yes.
That's the name that Alonzo picked for unnamed cast members on Battlestar Galactica.
Ah, very good. So we that Tarn that dies is some insignificant character, right?
Right.
Must be a conservative.
Exactly. So that's the first thing.
Okay.
The second thing, which I think a lot of the fans will be happy to know, is Richard Hatch is signed on right now for 6. Of the first 10 episodes.
Wow. What in the world are they going to use him for 6 episodes?
6 for the first 10, and he's going to be slotted to do a lot more. Rumor has it that he's going to be definitely a recurring character, and he's going to start up in episode 3.
Wow. Why?
It makes sense. The president's in jail now, so... Tom Zarek thinks it's probably a perfect opportunity to remove the president from office.
I guess. Oh, and the election's coming up, too, so that's going to play in. Okay.
And I think it's also to help maybe bring some of the older series guys along, too. But it looks like Hatch is really getting involved in Galactica.
Really? They tried that with Bastille Day, and the rings actually dropped with him on it.
Yeah. He wasn't too much a fun guy in that one compared to episode 11. I think he's going to be a great villain.
Yeah.
One person likened him to go to Dukat on Deep Space Nine or even Garrick. So
there you go.
He's going to be the foil.
Really? Yeah. And then when's the start date? Is it officially when they're going to start the second season?
July 15th.
So that'd be
July 15th. Another thing, which is a real, somewhat major spoiler, a lot of the Cylon plan is going to be revealed in episode 5.
Ooh, episode 5.
Where, and I'm trying to confirm this, but at least the one source says that the Cylons cannot reproduce themselves, so they're implanting their own hybrid embryos into human women.
Oh, so that's why they need the men to fertilize those embryos, right?
Exactly.
And I
think it's beautiful, too, because a lot of the people were criticizing the show that Boomer and Starbuck are female, but I mean it's all fitting into the Cylon plan.
Yes, it's perfect. You know, I'll volunteer to fertilize Boomer's embryo. Personally, I'll have to suffer, but I have to take one for the team.
That's right. But it makes sense why the Cylons haven't destroyed all the fleet yet, that they still want to do some experiments on at least some of the humans.
Really? Wow.
Right. So that's that.
Wow.
One other, spoilers that Leah Dama frees Laura Roslin from prison in episode 4, and takes her to the planet Kobol.
Oh, wait a minute. No, Lee releases Starbuck?
Roslin. Remember, she was in prison?
Oh, Roslin. I thought you said Thrace, but you said Roslin. So Lee's going to let her out of prison in episode...
Right, and takes her down to the planet Kobol.
Really?
So some big things are going to be happening on the planet Kobol.
How long are they going to spend the first part of the season on Kobol?
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like it, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yep. Big news.
Well, wait a minute now. Now I want to talk.
Okay, all right.
Hold on. We got a couple minutes yet, but I want to talk about the posting on Galactica Station about the CD coming out, right?
Yes. That's coming out on June 3rd from La La Land Records. It's over 78 minutes of original music from the first season of Battlestar Galactica.
Really?
And if you pre-order now, you can get an autographed copy by the composer, Bear McCreary.
Really? Now, has all the music, even that Irish music from...
Yes.
It's
great. They even have some sound samples.
Really?
On the site, too.
Wow,
they even post Bear McCreary's site where there's even additional sound samples. So it's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I like that music in the Kobol's Last Screaming Part 1 with the Irish music. That was really nice.
That's
interesting. And then I saw something else. I don't know who posted about the comic book. There's going to be a Galactica comic book now.
Right.
There's
a
Dynamite
comic book. And even before that, the Battlestar Galactica companion for the series.
Are they going to have, trading cards like they did back in the past? Like they put them in the Wonder Bread?
Yeah, they're going to...
They did, I swear to God.
You can buy a Pope trading card now.
They put trading cards in the Wonder Bread.
Yeah, they're going to have, I think they are. I bet some of them are going to have trading cards, right?
Right. I'm not sure they're putting them in bread, though.
Oh.
Well, I wonder if those are worth anything.
Them in the condoms.
You think those would be worth anything? Because I used to collect those out of the Wonder Bread.
Those are worth something. Yeah, he's old ones. He's got the old ones from the original show.
I used to. They're long gone.
The old bread, too?
Nope. it's right here in the studio. Here we go.
I saved the bread.
That's something else you smoke.
You never know. You never know when you need more bread.
Yeah.
Right.
I need bread. I need some sugar too. No. But I mean, so the comic book's coming out. You got the companion coming out, and somebody said there's gonna be some books written, like novels.
Yes. Some novels based on the series are gonna be written. I mean, this next year there's gonna be a flooding of Galactica merchandise.
Yeah. I wish we talked about a few weeks ago that we had a feeling the merchandising was going to flow once the show got renewed, and I understand that the ratings from last week did it. There is 0.9, so I mean it dropped. I mean at least it's people are watching it. The reruns.
Sure.
Anyway. So and then you got the huge news.
Hold on. Since this is your last time you're going to be on here for a while.
Okay.
Two things. One, I'm surprised that they're going to start in July.
Well, it's sci-fi. So, they do the Stargate shows in July, too. Yeah, only 10 episodes. Then
just,
they come back.
Just for the fact that, because I don't know if you've obviously haven't heard anything else, but if they were going to show the first season on NBC.
I heard a rumor, and then nothing's happened.
There's a rumor, I haven't heard anything lately.
Yeah, maybe because the new season's starting off so early in July, dilute everything by showing the reruns on NBC, huh?
Right.
So now the big news.
The big news.
Oh, okay, here we go.
In episodes 10 and 11, a two-parter.
Ooh.
The synopsis is, Galactica comes across another Battlestar.
Oh, my God, it's the Pegasus!
The Cylons as well.
Oh, no. It's got to be the damn Pegasus.
Yeah, I really think it's going to be the Pegasus.
Ooh.
I really think Commander Kane
is
going to come back, and who knows whether they might even get one of the original series stars on. But Ron Moore wanted to do this story, and I could see that this is going to be...
Oop. Oh, no. You there?
Okay. This is going to be... I'm here. Okay. This is going to be sort of like a cliffhanger.
Oh, I bet it's going to be.
So it's going to be part one, and then we'll have to wait 3 months
or
so for the second part to continue the story.
Wow. So Koenig, anybody just fell off their chairs.
This is from my reliable... Galactica source.
That the Galactica, sounds like the last episode of the first 10 is going to come across another Battlestar to survive the attack. And we're assuming it's going to be the Pegasus, right?
It would be very strange if it's going to be something completely different. I know Moore wanted to reimage two stories.
Wow.
Living Legend and War of the Gods.
That's got to be coming next then, huh?
And who knows, maybe War of the Gods will be the finale of season 2. But I really think this is cool that they have 20 episodes because it would be nice to have Commander Kane not go off, you know, at the end of the second part, but be a recurring character.
Well, yeah, but you think that they have to destroy, you know, the Pegasus or something like that, because you have two battle stars. I'm thinking maybe Edward James Olmos is only signed for two seasons, and then they'll have Kane there for when they, you know, kill off Adama or send him you know, into the fleet for medical attention, and have Kane that's going to have to step up and take command, huh?
Right. Adama in the first 4 to 5 episodes,
he's in bad shape,
out of coma, so
yeah.
He's going to be pretty much off his feet.
So
for the first 4 or 5 episodes.
Wow.
So.
I'd like to see Don Johnson come in and play Kane, because, you know, the Miami Vice connection would be kind of cool to have on that show, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I'm not sure.
Or even, to be daring, let's have an African-American.
There you go.
You know, I mean, you know, why does it have to be a good old white boy, right?
Oh,
or even a female commander.
Oh, I know, but I'm just...
That ought to make the original series fans love that, huh?
Yeah, but, you know, I'm just saying, well, who's to say this Kane's not really a Cylon agent, too?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, they could have grabbed the battle.
The show, I mean, it's just episode 5, from what I've seen with some of the plot threads, is going to be, with the Cylon Master plan and everything, that's going to be a killer,
really?
Killer episode.
Dramatic or action?
It's dramatic.
Wow.
It's not as action-driven as much as it's really psychological. I mean, what happens to Starbuck?
Wow.
That episode, it's cool.
Ooh, I hope they're not going to kill her off, are they? She's another guest on the show.
They're not going to kill her off.
They're killing off. How many people from my show? They're killing off Socinus, right? Socinus.
Right.
And they're
right.
killing off Sam Witwer, who plays Crash Town. And who else are they killing off?
Boomer.
Boomer.
One of the Boomers.
But Grace Park. We don't know which one it is. We don't know if it's the Galactica Cylon.
Right. And they kill off Tarn.
And they kill off whoever Tarn is. So, but wow, it's amazing. Yeah, I mean.
Yeah.
That's big. So,
this is something that just evolved from, you know, like a week ago.
Yeah.
All I knew was Tarn and then Hatch, and now a lot of other stuff is leaking out.
Now, in the chat room, Darth Marley is saying he thought Edward James Olmos was signed for 7 years. I don't know.
Well, a lot of the actors have at multi-year contracts.
Yeah.
I mean, just like the guys did on Star Trek Enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that, you
can't
know,
kill
if
off.
The show gets canceled,
yeah.
that the contracts, you know, are still good. So, I mean, the thing is, I've heard 5 to 6 seasons.
Really? Well, I've heard other people saying that Olmos doesn't want to do a long, drawn-out series again, you know, because how old is he? He's pushing 60, you know?
Yeah.
And
I've heard rumors like that, too, but then I saw that special before season 1 premiered, 33 and Water, and he looked pretty good, and he looked pretty charged up, and he said, on camera, he said, there's going to be a second season, and no, we're not going to find Earth.
Yeah, well, second season for him, who knows, they won't be asking about a third season.
I'm sure he and Mary McDonough eat up a big part of the budget.
Yeah, I mean, we said that before, you know.
Right.
Somebody said, where was it? They only get the budgets for the show is $400,000 an episode, so they got to take up at least half of that per
right.
episode. Those two.
I still think that Sky One is helping them with the budget too.
Yeah, but still though, well, that's incredible news, Koenig. So Koenig.
Yeah, and I know it hasn't circulated anywhere else. I was watching all the sites and everything. Mm. That. Last one I just found out this last weekend.
Yeah, well, that's big news. And anyway, actually, somebody say Edward James Olmos is about 53. That's correct, because I think Marianne T. Beverly gave me his age is something, but he plays Adama as being older. He plays Adama like 2 years older than what he is, you know, in real life. So that's where the confusion
comes
in.
Well, I think he was using Grecian formula for the miniseries because he has all black hair.
Yeah.
In the miniseries, I was watching part of the miniseries, the other time it was on Sci-Fi a couple of weeks ago, and in the series itself, he's got a lot of gray around his temples, so he's not using as much Grecian formula, I guess.
Anyway, on that note, Koenig, we'll let you go because we're out of time. Koenig?
Yes.
Okay, we'll let you go because we're out of time.
That's fine.
So maybe we'll have you come back when I return from my vacation in 2 weeks.
Hopefully I'll get more information.
Ah, please do. Thank you, Koenig.
Okay, you take care.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.
And once again, it was Koenig Rules with our big Galactica scoop of the year. Nobody else had that scoop about the Galactica coming across on their Battlestar at the end of the first batch of episodes in the season coming up. And supposedly, you know, we're guessing it's going to end in a cliffhanger and it's going to conclude in the second batch.
It is done, Imperius leader.
In January. So, anyway, I want to thank everybody for turning out for the show. I appreciate it. Like I said, I won't be here next week. There's no subject to discussion next week. And then 2 weeks on the 25th, I'll be back with Eric Olson from blogcritics.com and Koenig Rules. And we'll see if he's got more scoops in 2 weeks. And I'll have scoops from Florida after my surgery. But anyway, thank you all for listening. The Power Hour with Saab is next. And then Friday is Daily Noise with Khan.
Monday through Friday.
Monday through Friday. And then Spank Wagon is from 6 to 8 Pacific time. King Hash, the dude with the long hair, he's on from whatever the hell he's on from. He's from 8 till 10, right? I think I got it right.
He's on till midnight.
I thought you fired that bastard, King Hash.
You should. He's a freaking loser.
And then Sunday is Tap Out with the Three Horsemen and the chick, or whatever they call it now. And that's it. And it would have...
Email. What's your email?
SeanO'MacRadio@yahoo.com. And the Oliver Humperdinck's going to be on Sunday with the boys and the girl. So anyway, good night and have a pleasant tomorrow.